This is Jordan, and you're listening to the Code 7 Podcast Network.
Warning. This episode contains the three A's of podcasting: adult content, adult language, and awesomeness. You've been warned.
Welcome to Within the Trenches, true stories from the 911 dispatchers who live them.
Good morning, this is Ricardo with the Code 7 Podcast Network, and this is going to be episode 155 of Within the Trenches, a podcast based on the experience of being a 911 dispatcher. So there have been a lot of things going on since the last episode. The last episode, episode 154, was all based on the Kentucky Emergency Services Conference. And I had given a couple talks there. I gave my Keep Broadcasting Your Message presentation there. And I recorded an episode with the I Am 911 stories that the conference ended up getting from all these dispatchers that went there. There was about 17 different stories that I read. And on the lighter side, there was actually one that talked about how a caller was irate with the dispatcher because the dispatch ended up saying, "We're not going to send the fire department out to get your pet squirrel from the tree," which I thought was pretty funny. So the lighter side of I Am 911 is a story that went in there, and the dispatcher even mentions, "Bless your heart, I Am 911." So that was a lot of good stories in there. I'm going to be adding those to, I'm going to be tweeting them out, putting them on Instagram, as well as the album on the Facebook fan page for Within the Trenches podcast. So a lot of stuff coming up. Also, as you know, I've been dealing with some back issues. It sidelined me for a while. This past week, the pain was so bad. It was causing tension in the back of my neck. And every time I would go to stand up, I would get dizzy and almost fall over. Now, that lasted for a whole week. I don't know what happened in that last week and then going into the weekend, because towards the end of the week, into the weekend, and the start of this week, it's like gone. I don't have any pain. The dizziness is not there. I'm not sure what I changed or what happened. Maybe that was my body telling me, you need to slow the shit down, because I've been on the go and on the go, and I learned the hard way. So obviously my body thought I needed to learn the hard way. But I'm on the mend, and things are great. I feel way better than I have in a long, long time. So with that said, got some upcoming shows, and October, I think it's going to be 16th through the 19th, or 16th through the 18th, actually. I'm going to be in Alabama for the Gulf Coast Conference, and I'm going to be there for my company, which supports this podcast in digital leader next gen core services. And I'm going to be there presenting on Text for 911, and also doing the podcast and handing out some exclusive Alabama state dispatch roll call decal. So make sure to check those out. I'm also going to have I Am 911 ribbons there. And then I'm going to be at the Illinois conference doing the podcast as well. I'll have a booth set up. So a lot of things coming up and more to come. Before we get started here, a few days ago, what's been labeled the worst, active shooter incident in U.S. history occurred in Las Vegas, overnight. It was during a country music festival, and someone was shooting out into the crowd that was there. It was horrible. I woke up in the middle of the night, and of course, my phone is right next to my bed, and I couldn't sleep for whatever reason. And I remember now, my daughter was crying, and my wife was trying to get her to go back to sleep. I looked at my phone and saw all of this shit going on Twitter, and they were talking about this active shooter incident, and just, you all know exactly what happened. I don't have to go any further. But just yesterday, the President of the United States and the First Lady were out visiting Metro out there in Las Vegas. All the officers, and especially the dispatchers who dealt with this incident, they were honored there and commended for their work. There are many, many people that need to be commended, but it's nice for once to see dispatch included in stuff like that. And, you know, there's a picture with him and the dispatchers. You know, we listened to the audio and they kicked so much ass. Maybe I could have done it. I can say that I could have done that. But man, they did an excellent job. And I have to give a shout out to them. I tip my headset to you. It was amazing. Well done to all of you, for everything that you've done. I'm going to be in Las Vegas actually, twice this coming year, once for the Navigator Conference and then the APCO National Conference. So I hope that I get the chance to not only tour that center, but that I get to meet the dispatchers, that work that, and hell, even have them on the show to just talk about anything. I don't know. It'd be an honor to meet them. So there it is. Open door. Moving on now to my guest. Another situation, happened, recently, and there were, it's hurricane season, and, or at least it was. I'm actually not sure now if it's already ended, but when it really started hitting here, or in the area, Hurricane Harvey hit like a freight train, and so much shit happened. And I have been in contact with a dispatcher in the area, which I just recently learned was really ground zero for that hurricane hitting, this area, of Texas. And we're going to talk about not only Hurricane Harvey, but her 911 story and how she got into this. So my guest today is Dee, and she's a dispatcher out of the city of Rockport, Texas, which is Aransas County. Did I get that right?
Yes.
Okay, good. I was staring at it as I was getting to the word, and I was like, okay, Aransas, because she just was saying that people think it's Kansas, so or Arkansas and yes. Kansas or something like that. So, okay, good. I got it right. So how are you doing today?
I'm good. Good. How are you?
I'm doing all right. Like I was saying, man, I am on the mend. I'm feeling so good. But the talk to me about a week or so ago, and it was hell. It seemed like I was cross-eyed or something. I could not concentrate. It was just nuts. But I'm on the mend. Things are good.
That's awesome.
So, I guess before we get into everything, you guys are dealing with, still probably dealing with, building back up from the devastation of Hurricane Harvey, correct?
Yes. Yes. It's going to take a long time, before, you know, our beautiful town is going to be back to what is normal. But yeah, we're still in a recovery stage. We still have a lot of cleanup.
Yeah, I can imagine. I've got a cousin who lives in the greater Harris County area. And uh-huh. I was looking at all the pictures that she was posting, and I thought, geez, I can't even imagine what it's like over there right now. And the amount of news stories that were coming out, but we'll get to that here in just a moment. I want to know more about you. How did you get into 911 and how many years have you been doing it?
I will be a dispatcher for 2 years in December. I am married to a deputy. So I've been in the law enforcement family, for a while now. And, so I've just always, it's just been a passion of mine. I finally got the opportunity. There was a job opening and for the county that my husband works for. And, I got the opportunity and I ran with it, and I have not regretted it ever since. And I know this is the job that I'm supposed to do. I absolutely love my job. I absolutely love being a dispatcher.
You know, this is going to sound stupid, but that hearing that gives me like goosebumps a little bit, only because I'm so passionate about 911. It's good to hear when people say, I've gotten into this and it's like, it's my calling. It's my passion. Like, mm-hmm. like I can hear it in your voice. And so I don't know if that sounds stupid or not, but you know,
no, it's definitely
very cool.
Something I've always been interested in it. And then I never really thought it was something that would be good for me. But then I just took the opportunity came and I was like, you know what, I'm going to see if that's what I need to do. And I'm glad I took the chance. I don't think I'm ever going to do anything else. I absolutely love my job. And I know this is what I'm supposed to do. Exactly.
That's awesome. Did you do a sit along, or I'm assuming you did some ride-alongs as well, probably with your husband.
Oh yeah, being married to him, I've been able to ride along with him.
Yeah.
Since he and I've been together, and then I got to know some dispatchers throughout the years, and they have always told me it's a love-hate relationship type of thing.
Yeah, that's
and,
right.
But yeah, I've always been interested in it. And then, like I said, the opportunity came, and then I was like, you know what? I'm going to go for it. And plus, you know, it was also nice because I was going to be able to spend some more time with my husband, of course, because, you know, being a Leo wife, you don't see them very often. So,
right. Yeah, exactly.
So, but yeah, so, yeah, I took the opportunity, and like I said, I'm so grateful, so blessed, and I absolutely love this job.
So I have to ask really quick before we get into any more specifics. So you guys both work for the same county then, correct?
Yes, we do. Mm-hmm.
What is that like? Do you guys work in the same shift?
It depends.
Oh man. Okay.
Of course we, in dispatch, our schedules change every 4 months. Well, now I don't know what we're going to do. Things have been up in the air since the storm, but before the storm, we changed every 4 months, and our deputies, they change every 2 months. So there's about 2 months where I work with them, and then 2 months I don't. So,
okay,
so
gotcha.
It's just kind of a rotating thing.
Well, and I've always wondered about that, because when I worked in dispatch, I worked with a couple of my coworkers had husbands, or, you know, boyfriend or whatever, that, that they worked on the same shift. And if I remember correctly, there wasn't a time where there was anything high priority, but I know when we switched shifts, there was a time when I was on an opposite shift from a coworker, but they were on the same shift with their spouse. And I had to ask, you know, what is it like for you when you hear a high priority call come in and they're all on it? Do you sit there and worry, or how do you keep that in the back of your head? I mean, I guess I know, or it could be the that same was, as when taking a phone call, you keep things in check, but I mean, this is your husband here.
Well, that was a question that was asked to me before I even got the job, because of course they knew that I was married to one of their deputies, and they asked me, how are you going to, you know, handle it if he goes to a hot call? And I know how he works. I know that he's an awesome officer, and I know that whatever he does is going to be for the best interest for him, in order to come home safe. But after being behind the mic, I've gotten to love every single one of the officers that I dispatch for. And I love them all equally. I mean, of course I love my husband a little bit more, you know, just a little bit more, but
yeah, exactly.
But honestly, no, like I feel like when I'm at work, I'm a dispatcher. I'm not his wife. I'm just his dispatcher.
Gotcha. That makes
so
sense.
So I'm able to kind of separate it. So I don't think every dispatcher is like that, but for me personally, that's just how I've been. I'm able to separate it.
Gotcha. No, that's the way to do it. I mean, 'cause when you're taking 911 calls, you know, you have to separate that emotion and keep it in the back of your head to stay calm. So it completely makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, good. No, now I know. That's good. So how big is your center?
We have a total of 12 dispatchers. Well, actually right now we don't, but we have the capability of having a total of 12 dispatchers. Mm-hmm. We always have two dispatchers on at all times. And then when we're lucky and we're fully staffed, there are some days that we have three dispatchers on at one time, but we're never alone. We're never by ourselves. There's always one other person with us at all times.
That's good, because I don't know if you've heard some past episodes that I've had, but I've talked about how when I very first started out, it was a small police department, and it was one dispatcher per 8 hours. And it was a pain in the ass to have to, I mean, I would have to hold going to the bathroom for a few hours because there was nobody there to watch the radio, or I would have to just pray and hope that nobody calls in and say, I'm 10-7 down the hall, and then run and do my thing and come back. And, you know, sometimes somebody would be standing there waiting at the window like, oh, where were you at? How can I help you?
Exactly.
Yes. Let's move on. We don't need to know what I was doing.
Exactly. Yes.
Oh, that's funny. So, you know, working in a center like this, that had to have been pretty hard working something like Hurricane Harvey or any other big incidents. Do you guys call people in? And I mean, because there's only so many consoles and phones that you can have. How do you work that out?
We have four consoles, a total of four consoles in our center. But the storm, when the storm happened, we were all basically there because we just couldn't be away, which is kind of awesome. All of us were able to be there. All of us girls were able to be there. We have one. We're all girls except for one. We have one man in my dispatcher.
Poor guy. Center,
and I know, bless his heart. But anyways, yeah, we were all there. Of course, we were all preparing for it a few days before. I personally had worked like the Wednesday before the storm. I had worked a 12-hour shift. Mm-hmm. The Thursday before the storm, I worked a 13-hour shift, and then I ran home and took care of my house, what little bit I needed to take care of. And then I came back just because I couldn't be away. I knew that we needed the help. I knew that we needed all hands on. So it was interesting. It was hard to describe how we all just came together. We just all just came together and just started taking calls, just getting on the radio when we needed to. I mean, it was hectic, of course. I mean, everybody was in a panic mode.
Right. Yeah. Which is to be expected in something like that. Yeah, for sure.
Right. Right.
Now, so going back really quick, what was it like for you in the beginning when you first started? So, I mean, you had some experience, you knew some of the dispatchers, you did ride alongs with your husband. So you knew kind of how it worked back and forth. But when you get out there on the floor, I mean, what are you looking at? You're sitting at your console, and how many screens do you have?
We have a total of five screens. Two of our screens are our 911 screens, mm-hmm. and then three is just for like our CAD system. I'm sorry, that's my dog in the background.
That's fine.
we have three for our CAD system and our and whatnot. But yeah, we have a total of five screens. And so at first I was really kind of like, okay, am I going to be able to do this? Like, am I going to be able to multitask? And
right. Yeah.
But then I sat down and the girls that trained me were awesome. They trained me. I started on graveyards. So they kind of slowly built me up and, I picked up on it really fast. It really did help that I also had done some previous, I worked for the state before I became a dispatcher and I was a correctional officer. Mm-hmm. So I already knew 10 codes. I already knew a lot of the lingo. So that wasn't hard for me to pick up. I was nervous because I'm not good at, direction. And so I was like, great, you know, but I picked it up really fast. Honestly, I really did. And it helped a lot that I rode around with the guys, with our officers and just being able to see my streets and that kind of stuff really did help. So sitting down and then, I don't know, I was nervous at first. And then I was just like, you know what? I can do this. So I just jumped into it. And of course, you know, you make mistakes. Everybody does.
Right. Yeah.
But I really didn't feel like it was overwhelming. After I'd been there, I was there about a month and then, I started really picking it up and really kind of doing my own thing. And they were telling me I was doing pretty dang good. So
that's awesome.
So I was very proud of myself.
As you should be. Yeah. I mean, yeah, to pick it up that fast, that's awesome. And like you had said, I mean, it was like a calling for you. So it just fit. When I first started out, I struggled a little bit because I wasn't sure. It was the dynamic of the dispatch center that I was in. So the way they did their training was there's four phases. So, you know, the first phase, you're learning all the, all the codes, the ORIs, and you know, all of that stuff first, you know, the geographic you know, area, how it's all set up, and and then, you know, you move to like non-emergency phones. But the way they were doing it in the beginning, like nobody can talk to you. You are working with your trainer, and that's how it is. You're with that CTO. It's not until the last phase, which is the shadow phase, that you get to work as a team. And no one had explained right in the beginning that that's how it's supposed to work. So I remember coming home and telling my wife, you know, I don't think I'm going to do this. I said, these people don't talk to me. You know, it doesn't feel like a team. You know, I've got all these people in here. I need to be learning how to work as a team as well. But then when I told somebody about it, they said, you know, yeah, this is actually how it works. And I said, okay, well, you guys should say something right away, because that kind of, I almost quit. And they said, oh, no, you're doing so good. And I said, well, I thought I was doing good, but you know, we're not working like a team here. So then, you know, they kind of changed it up after that, and they were having them do more, team-based. So if it wasn't for that, who knows what would have happened. Actually, I'm kind of anal like that. I don't quit. So I'm going to keep doing it until I get through it.
Yeah.
But like with you, I mean, you know, you knew you had it, you were doing good, and you kept on with it. So that's awesome.
I actually, was on the mic, like I said, pretty fast. In my center, I had the support of everyone. My boss is amazing. I absolutely love my boss. She was constantly checking up on me, making sure I felt okay. If I had any problems with any of the girls, you know, if I had any problems with my trainer, I mean, she was constantly keeping up with me. And so I felt comfortable. And so of course there were some things that I had questioned about and stuff like that. So I was blessed enough to be able to be comfortable with my boss, to be able to go to her when I had concerns.
That's good. That's always good to be able to do that. Cause I mean, at my old PSAP, we were able to do that as well. We had our assistant director and our director. Our director was good. She was just, because she was not the, how do I put it? Like the face of, she was more of the face of dispatch. She wasn't in dispatch, but she was the one out there doing all the meetings and all the other stuff. So we never really saw her, but we knew her from the point, because she was in dispatch with us, and she moved up in the ranks and became the director. And then our assistant director was the same way. My CTO, Tammy, was in dispatch with us, and then she moved up to assistant director. So it was cool to have them as our admin going through that, because, you know, they came from where we were, and we were able to relate to them, and they could relate to us. It wasn't like somebody coming out of nowhere who doesn't know anything about dispatch or has never been in dispatch. And you know, is trying to rule when they don't really know the job, which can, that happens sometimes.
Yeah.
So do you remember your first call?
No, I know that, I think like one of my first calls, where we live at, of course we're right there on the ocean. Mm-hmm. So we have a couple of different types of people who live down here. We have what we call our snowbirds. Everybody from up north likes to come down south during the wintertime. And so whenever I started, of course, it was in December. So it was snowbird season. So I think I honestly, one of my first calls was a medical call. And so I was kind of nervous, of course, because I'm taking a 911 phone, you know, like, oh my gosh.
Right, yeah.
But no, it wasn't bad. It was just a medical call, which we have a lot of those in our area, just because it's a older community whenever it's snowbird season. And so we have a lot of, like I said, medical calls during snowbird season. And then of course, during the warmer months, we have the younger generation and all the tourists and whatnot. But yeah, like I said, I started in December. So in January, it was like whenever I started really taking calls, and I know it was a medical call. So I was nervous, but And of course my trainer was sitting right there, and,
right, yeah.
And they always laughed at me because I have a lot of facial expressions. And so I remember my trainer just like, okay, breathe D, you're going to be fine. It's just a 911 call. You know? So, yeah.
That's funny. That kind of sounds like me, cause I'm rather animated as well. So whenever I would take a call, you know, I would turn to my partner who's on phones with me, and I would like make faces and then say like, you need to listen to this, cause this is a crazy call. And you know, they would jump on as well and listen. But then if something funny would happen, they're laughing and I'm trying to bite my lip so that I don't laugh as well, because you know, that will make me a dick on a 911 call laughing at somebody. So I would sometimes have to lift the receiver over my head to kind of chuckle and put my head down so that I could chuckle to myself. Oh my gosh.
Well, we have a really cool mute button. So, yeah. So I would mute it a lot. There's lots of times when I would mute.
Well, and like mute that. Is great, but if you forget to hit the mute button or you brush the button and, you know, I've had that happen where I thought I hit the mute button and they were just as quiet as can be. And I said something across the room to somebody and it didn't have anything to do with that call. It had to do with something else. And the person says, excuse me. And I said, I thought I put you on. I thought I put you on hold really quick or muted it. I was answering a question from a different call. Oh, but what I don't even remember what it was that I answered, but what I answered kind of was similar to the call that I was dealing with already. So they were like, what the hell are you talking about?
Yeah.
So what about a call that has stuck with you?
There was a call, actually it happened not very long ago. We had a suicide, and a teenager had committed suicide. And I got the phone call of his mom, and she came home and found him. He had shot himself. And it really hit me and my partner hard that day, because around the time that he shot himself, he called us. But it was silent on the phone, and it was just what we thought, of course, was a pocket dial.
Right.
My partner did call the phone back, and just, you know, nobody answered. So it was a pocket dial, just to us. And then when the mom called, I received the phone call, and she's just screaming. I mean, just screaming on the phone. And, you know, I'm trying to get her to calm down and to breathe and to talk to me and tell me what's going on. Cause at this point I have no clue why she's screaming in the phone.
Right. Exactly.
I get her to blurt out her address. So I'm already sending somebody over there, but I don't know why yet. And then I finally get her to talk to me, and you know, she tells me that her son's in his bedroom. He had shot himself. So at this point, I knew it was bad. I knew it was really bad. And she's just screaming. I mean, just screaming. And like, I'm a mom, so you know, I mean, just being a mom too, like it just breaks your heart.
Right. Exactly.
And she's just screaming and screaming and screaming. And I'm just trying to get her to calm down. And finally she like stops, just like right in the middle. It's just like, it clicked in her brain. She's like, I don't know why I'm screaming at you. I don't know why I'm screaming at you. She goes, I'm sorry, you didn't do this. She goes, and I don't know why I'm screaming at you. And I, you know, I comfort her and I'm trying to get her to calm down a little bit. And then she's just, that's just the only way she knows how to cope, is she's just screaming. And that Jeez. Sticks with me. Just her screams, just pleading over and over. Why did you do this? Why, you know? And it, like I said, it hurt, it stung, and it's something that I will never forget. And that wasn't even my first, suicide call. It wasn't my first call that I've gotten so that somebody's found their loved one, mm-hmm. but I think it hit close to home. because she's a mom, you know, and it was a mother finding her child that way. And, and I think it also hit close to home too, because he called us, you know, and it's our job to get help. And so it hurt. It really, that was a really tough call. That was really, really tough. It was a teenager in our community, and Rockport is not a very big town. And so we know a lot of people, you know, and so it just hurt, you know, and it still to this day breaks my heart, like breaks my heart.
But, yeah. Cause it makes you wonder, you know, when you get that open line and, you know, you're thinking it's one thing, but you don't know. I mean, how are you supposed to know? How would you have ever known, you know, but it definitely, and I can relate because I've told the story before, but I had a similar, a call where someone had committed suicide and, you know, I tried to call them, but, they had already driven their car into a tree, by the time I was calling them. So the phone was just ringing in the car, but the guy was already gone, you know, but like you, I was playing it back in my head. Like, was there anything else I could have done? Was there something else? Was there a different approach? And it kind of eats at you. But I mean, definitely like, the way we're doing this right now, talking about it or just writing about it or something, it heals, but it's still going to be there. You know, you're always going to think about it. But oh man, I can't imagine. And especially because it's a smaller community, you know, you also think, did I walk by this person? You know, did I ever see this person, you know, and just never knew. And, you know, maybe I saw them yesterday and then this happens today. It's an interesting thing.
I think too, what really got us, me and my partner at that night, he called us. So it's like he wanted help, but he'd already made up his mind. And that's what I keep telling myself too. Like, yes, he called us, but he already made up his mind. And there's not much we can do for someone who's already made up their mind like that.
Exactly.
And so, but yeah, at the time, of course, I mean, it was hard. My partner and I both had to take a few minutes and step away, you know, because we both shed some tears that night.
Right.
So, yeah, that was a difficult call. Definitely one of the ones that I will never forget.
It's good that you both had a chance to step away for a little bit, because there are a lot of centers where you don't get a chance. You're there and you go to the next one.
And we didn't even really get to step away right away. Our center at that time, I was working what I call our evening shift, which is our mid shift. Mm-hmm. And that's one of our busiest shifts. And we didn't even really get to step away until like hours later. But yeah, we were able to step away. But yeah, we were super busy that day too. So,
you know, it's probably good that it was super busy though, that you weren't able to take a breath because it hit you so hard, but you were so busy that you didn't realize it. But when you finally got that chance, then you were finally able to kind of let it out and, you know, deal with it then. So that's good. That's always good and I always love being busy, but, you know, sometimes I want that closure as well. It's just good that you guys had a chance to actually do all of that. So that's good. So moving from there, from your 911 story, we're going to listen to a, video really quick. It's a video clip off of, CNN on Hurricane Harvey. And we talked about that a little bit earlier, but now we're going to get into Hurricane Harvey and how your dispatch center dealt with it, how it was for you. So I'm going to play this. It's only about a minute and a half here. So we're going to play this and then we're going to go into our chat. So hold on one moment.
What did you just go through back there? Hell? How much water is in your house?
You can see just people are relieved to at least be to dry water. You can imagine just what they've gone through over the past 12 hours.
Okay. All right. All right, we got you. Don't worry. Don't worry. We got you. We got you. Don't worry.
There's been no cell service since Thursday, Friday. Haven't gotten a hold of anybody. My mom and dad's watching. I'm okay.
Yeah, I'm in Rockport. Okay. Dad, I love you.
It was over 5 feet in our house. We barely made it out. I'm just so grateful that they came.
It hurts because you see people work their lives to build something. And in one night, it's all gone. For me, most of it is gone. I'll build back. I got a strong working parents that made me believe hard work will get you back. I'll get going. It's just hard to see everything.
It's gone. Everything's gone.
We're going to try to see what we can salvage from the wreck.
So that was a short clip from CNN. I'm going to make sure to embed this clip on the blog post when I post this episode up. But the last, you heard the gentleman say he was in Rockport. So the area that you live in and that you dispatch in. Now, he was saying that there was no cell service, that there hasn't been cell service for days during that time. And mm-hmm. the next scene, he's talking to his parents. He says, I love you. The phone that he's using is, it looks like a satellite phone. So I don't know if the news crew hooked him up with that, but whoever hooked him up with that, that was
exactly
awesome.
What happened. We had no cell service at all. For days. We had no communication with anyone really for days. A lot of us had, we only had like two satellite phones. And so, what he was using was one of the news crews that were interviewing him, their satellite phone. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Listening to it is one thing, but and that's exactly why I'm going to embed the video on the blog post as well, because you see they have aerial views of the Rockport area and the devastation that it caused. Now for yourself, I know that when we first started talking, you had said that you were headed home to get things put together there. Did your home make it okay? Or were there any damage or anything?
I do not live in Rockport. I live in a town just outside of Rockport, and where I live about 12 miles from Rockport. Mm-hmm. So my home, I have damage, yes, but nothing like the people in Rockport have. I have no fence, but I don't think anybody in this area for a few counties has a fence.
Oh, wow.
I have a little bit of roof damage, not a whole lot. And we're very blessed. We were very blessed with very minimal damage.
So in the beginning of this episode, we were kind of talking about how you and your crew were getting prepared as you see in the news that, you know, Hurricane Harvey is headed your way. What kind of calls were you guys receiving while you guys were preparing for this? Because I can only imagine that it was complete chaos, where people were probably going to grocery stores and trying to buy out all the water and supplies that they need.
Yes.
You know, what kind of things were going on as it was headed your way?
The days before were crazy, and you named it. Every grocery store had no water whatsoever. Everybody was buying all kinds of food and water. And then people just kept calling and calling and calling and asking, you know, do we have to leave? Is there a mandatory conviction evacuation? Do we have to leave? And we... At first, you know, it was a recommended evacuation, and then it went to the day before a mandatory evacuation. So everybody was trying to get out. And a lot of the calls that were coming in were, I can't leave. I have no way to go. I have no way to leave. What do I do? So we were giving them resources and having them call certain places to that could possibly help them to evacuate, because we really wanted as many people to leave as possible. And again, it was just nonstop calls. I mean, the phone would ring, I'd take the call, hang up, and the phone would ring again. it was just nonstop for the days before the hurricanes hit. We had I mean, and then we had wrecks, you know, of course, because everybody's trying to leave. Right. And down where we live, we have a lot of like RV parks. So a lot of people were packing up their RVs, and then people were asking, okay, well, now that there's a mandatory evacuation, is it okay for me to come in and get my RV and get out? So we were just advising them, if you can get here and get your stuff and then leave, do that. Do it as quickly as possible. And so it was hectic. It was very stressful, tiring. I was exhausted.
Right.
Because I had signed up for overtime for those 2 days, you know, a month ahead of time, not knowing that the storm was going to hit us a month ahead of time, you know?
Yeah.
So I was, like I said, I was working long hours the days before the storm hit.
So you were kind of primed, you know, without you knowing, you were priming yourself and getting and training yourself for these long hours that you were going to be working even more than what you were before. Mm-hmm. So, okay. So the area you had said is close to the water. So how does the evacuation even work? Cause I'm thinking about Florida and how, when Hurricane Irma was coming in, and people were evacuating, seeing the aerial pictures of the highways bumper to bumper going north. If you guys are by the water, are you close to like a highway as well where everybody would be able to go north? Mm-hmm. Okay, cool.
We're close to 37, Highway 37. Highway 37 was bumper to bumper. It was hectic, just like when Irma hit Florida. Traffic was just insane. We, like I said, there was multiple accidents. I mean, people were running out of gas. We ran out of gas in our area.
Jeez.
Was it
mandatory that all of you were to be in the dispatch center? I'm assuming, since you're so close to the water, the dispatch center is that it's also built for hurricanes, right?
Our building that we are in was built to withstand a Category 5 hurricane.
Gotcha. Okay.
Our building that we were in, is built for the hurricane. However, we were concerned because our area of our building, it floods really easily.
Oh, man.
And so we didn't know if we were going to have to. We have the public safety center, and then we have our city service center. So we didn't know if we were going to have to evacuate from our building at the public safety center and go to the city service center or not. We didn't have to, which was great. But it was all up in the air. It was all up in the air, whether we were going to evacuate to go over the service center or we were going to stay in our own building. We're going to stay in our own building for as long as possible. But my boss was telling us, you know, if we have to, we will go to the service center, because it was a little higher up off the ground.
Yeah.
Than what the public safety center is. So,
geez. So then on top of all the crazy calls that are coming in for accidents, people that are trying to find resources or asking you guys if they can come in, you are also on the bubble of whether you need to leave, evacuate your center to go to a different center, the backup one or emergency or whichever.
Yes.
And in the beginning of before I started dispatching, I did not have high blood pressure, but when I got into dispatching, I developed high blood pressure. So I can only imagine that I would probably have to up my, my meds working during something like that.
Yes,
because
yes.
I mean, that's even more stressful, trying to figure out, well, where the hell am I going to be? What are we going to do? Cause we're here. We have to be here for the people.
Yes. Whenever we knew that the storm was coming, we were told that we needed to pack a bag. We needed to pack a bag that was going to have at least several days worth of clothing and whatever else we needed to bring, bedding and whatnot. So I felt like I was moving in. I had a big old suitcase and my favorite pillow and blanket and just some things, you know, that were special to me that I wanted to make sure that I kept, because as I said before, my husband's a first responder as well. So he and I both had orders to stay, in Aransas County. And so he had to start his shift at 5 o'clock that morning, the day of the storm. And I wasn't supposed to go in until that evening, but I couldn't sleep and I couldn't just sit at my home. I just couldn't sit there. I couldn't stay there. So I finished doing what things, little things I needed to do for our home here. And then, loaded up my vehicle and I went to back to work. And I was in the area and I was, you know, texting all my girls, asking the ones that were not on duty if they needed any help getting some of the things that they wanted to bring up to the center. Mm-hmm. If they needed any help boarding up their windows for their home, anything that they needed me to do, because I wasn't going to stay in at my house, just sit there. I mean, I just.
Right. Yeah. So. You got to keep your mind busy. You got to do something.
Yeah. So I went to Rockport and I helped my girls with whatever they needed. And then we all ended up at the center and we all just were there. We were at the public safety center and we were all there watching it and watching as the winds kept getting stronger and stronger and stronger. And
I was just going to ask, what was that like so Rockport is ground zero, it hits. What is that like for you sitting in there, taking calls, listening to everything going on outside?
Well, it let up. I mean, it was raining all day. And of course it just kept getting stronger and we were all take breaks and go outside and see how fast the wind was blowing and see, you know, the rain coming down and see that the water is rising in certain areas. And then we'd go back inside and take calls. And, it's kind of indescribable, really. We were all on edge, of course. We were all anticipating. We didn't know what was to come. We had no clue what to expect. There hasn't been a hurricane that has hit Rockport like this in like 40 years.
Wow.
So, I mean, none of us really knew what to expect.
Right. So it goes through. You've got people that obviously stayed behind as well. Mm-hmm. And now you've got places that are completely destroyed and flooded out. What kind of calls are you guys getting then? Are they more medicals or did you even have people that were
what happened was, now at our center, it's the sheriff's office and the police department in the same building. Mm-hmm. So, all of our guys, all of our PD and SO guys were all out trying to, you know, help people evacuate and whatnot. And then we had all made the decision that it had started to be unsafe for our officers to respond to anything. So everybody had come into the building and we all kind of started hunkering down. It was eerie because power started going out in certain areas. We still had power for a long time. and then we started getting calls of people just pleading, like the winds picked up really, really strong, like over 100-mile-an-hour winds. Mm-hmm. And people's houses were starting to be demolished. At this time, I'm already on a console and I'm starting to answer phones and 911 calls. And a lot of them were people just in panic, the ones that didn't evacuate. I remember taking a phone call of a lady who she's pleading with me, can someone please come help me? Come help me. And at that time, I had to tell her no, you know, and as a dispatcher, that's not common. We don't tell them no, you know,
right. Yeah.
You know, we get help to them. But we had to. It was not safe for anyone to leave. It was not safe for anyone to be anywhere. We needed to stay where we were at. But I remember talking to this older lady and she it was right before the eye of the storm had hit. It's the first part of the storm that was coming through. And she was just begging and pleading with me, please come save me. Please come save me. Please come help me. The roof had had peeled off of her apartment building, and one of her walls on her apartment had collapsed.
Jeez.
And you could hear the strong wind in the background, and you could hear the rain, and my heart was breaking. I mean, I couldn't send anybody, but we had tried so hard before the storm to get everybody to leave. And, you know, those who chose to stay, that was their choice.
Yeah.
But I mean, she was like, well, I don't know what to do. Rain's coming in and I'm getting soaked, and part of the wall hit me and I'm bleeding. And so it was just like, I told her, I said, well, ma'am, I said, I can't send somebody to you right now. You know, you're just going to have to try and find shelter somewhere. And she was pleading with me. I don't know where to go. I don't know what to do. And at that point, we were just advising people who would call us on like this to go to another apartment, go to somebody else's apartment. If it's still intact, you know, go over there and find some type of shelter.
Right.
She's like, well, I can't get in. The door's locked. I said, break a window, get in somehow to get safety. And so, I mean, it was heartbreaking, but at the same time, like, it was just kind of conflicting because these people knew that the storm was coming. But it was heartbreaking too, because now, you know, they have nothing, you know, and
yeah.
I can't send someone. I can't. It was just too unsafe. And so at that time, that was, like I said, that was the first part of the storm. And then the eye hit, and we all still had phones. Well, not all of us, but some of us still had phones when the eye of the storm hit. And then the eye of the storm hit, and then that's when we lost everything. We lost power. We were on generators. We were on generators for like several days. Our building was on generators. And we lost all communication. Our phones stopped working, and we had one of our IT guys that was there, and he was able to reroute our phones system to some of our cell phones, some of us who still had cell phone service. So what was happening was, during all of this, our 911 system had stopped working. But again, he was able to reroute the 911 system to our personal cell phones.
That's awesome.
So our personal cell phones were just blowing up. And there were only a handful of us who had service still. So those of us who still had service, we were the ones who were having to answer our cell phone. And so I was getting calls on my cell phone. Jeez. During all of this.
Oh my God.
And it's 911. So, you know, so we had communication again during the eye, and then right at the very end of the eye is when we lost everything. Everyone lost all cell phone service, all power. It was completely gone. So at that time, we didn't know what to do. So it's calm. I say calm, but it wasn't. Winds were still very strong during the eye of the storm, but it wasn't over 100 miles. It had calmed down.
Right.
So our guys, we knew of certain places that had already been destroyed from some of the calls before we lost all communication. So during the eye of the storm, our officers started going out. And in fact, we were able to rescue a few people during the middle of the storm. During the eye, when it was calm, we knew we had about a 45 minute gap. Mm-hmm. To where our guys could go out and see who they could help save during that. And then we knew about what time they needed to come back when the second part of the storm was going to hit again. So, a lot of our guys have gone out and started trying to see, but when we went outside during the eye of the storm, we went outside and it was just completely pitch black, of course, because there's no power anywhere. So it was eerie. It was very eerie. It was no power anywhere, but all of our police units, all their lights and sirens are going off.
Right.
Because the storm had busted out all of our windows. And so the computer systems in our cars, you know, we're making everything go off, and the lights and sirens are all going off. And I mean, so Jeez. It was pitch black outside, but you could see all of our red and blues. And so
I can see all of it. It's just complete chaos.
Yes. Yes, it was. And so, like I said, during the other storm, they were able to go save a few people and bring them to our jail, because we were sheltering some people there, not many, but we were able to bring them back and bring them to our jail and have them sheltered there. And then everybody came back in when it was time to come back in, because we knew the second part of the storm was going to hit. Second part of the storm hit, and we didn't know what to do with ourselves. We were all inside the building. We had no communication with anybody. No one had anything. So it was quiet. It was an eerie quiet in dispatch.
The worst words to say in dispatch as well.
Yes. And so we were just kind of sitting around, you know, we didn't really know what to do with ourselves. So my boss was like, you know, well, right now there's not anything we can do, so we need to all try and get as much rest as possible. So a bunch of us try to take a nap, which was hard. But I wasn't able to. I ended up staying up, and me and my coworkers that were couldn't sleep. Some of the calls that we had already generated before the storm and we had lost all power, we started making a list of certain places that we knew that we needed to go check on as soon as we were able to get out and once the storm had passed us. So we were up all night. The day of the storm, I know I was up over 24 hours that day. I had no sleep.
Jeez.
And then I guess it was about 8 o'clock in the morning whenever, and again, I don't know for sure if that's what time it was, because the days before the storm and the days after the storm all kind of run together. But we got up and we were able to open our doors and look outside, and it's still pouring rain. Winds are still kind of strong, not 100 miles an hour strong, but it was strong. And the next morning when it's sunlight, that's when all of our guys, you know, started getting up and leaving and going and just seeing the rescue stage. And I felt helpless because we were there. We were told we needed to stay there. But, you know, I felt like I wasn't doing anything. I'm just sitting there. We have no phones. We have no communication with each other. All of our towers, our radio towers had been damaged. So we had no communication with our guys on the radios. It was very hard. We were all just didn't know what to do, really. But our guys, like I said, they got up in that next morning and they put on their boots and they just went to go see if there's people that they needed to rescue. And
that's awesome.
Yeah.
That they were able to go out and do that. It kind of sucks that you guys were still there and, you know, trying to figure out what to do. But I mean, you guys had gone through a lot of shit already by that time. So I commend you and your crew on everything that you guys did. That's amazing. I can't, just listening to you describe this is just, man, I mean, I can see it all in my head. The way you said it was pitch black, but all you can see is, you know, the red and blues going off. That's like some Walking Dead shit right there. That's that's some crazy stuff. Just complete chaos.
Yeah, it was. It was insane. We didn't, like I said, we didn't have any communication with anybody. All of us, we had a few satellite cell phones. Mm-hmm. And so, of course, during the storm, all of us are still trying to keep in contact with our loved ones and our family and to let them know that we're okay and whatnot. And so once the next morning, we were all trying to use those few satellite phones.
I bet.
And it would come and go. Some of them would work and some of them wouldn't. And so it was just like, you know, we didn't know when we were going to be able to let our loved ones know that we were okay.
Right.
And so it was just, I don't know. Like I said, it was indescribable. It's something that I will never forget for the rest of my life.
Right.
But within hours after the storm hit, my boss and I and one of my other coworkers, we had walked across the street to the jail because the jail had figured out that we had one landline that was working.
Oh, nice.
And so we all going over there, we were all rushing over there to use that landline. And it was a fax machine line. And so we were all using, I mean, there was a long line for all of us to use this one line. And this landline. And it was like, hallelujah, you know, like we can talk to the outside world, you know, like, yeah. And so my boss and I had just left the jail from making phone calls to our loved ones to let them know that we're alive and we're safe and we're okay. And then we could come out of the jail and here come about, I guess, 10 of our Texas DPS trooper cars just right down the road with their red and blues. And it was just like, wow, we have somebody here to save us, to help us. We have help. And so it was a relief. And I know that I cried. I know that my boss cried. I mean, it was just tears of joy. Like, we were just like, you know, wow, we have somebody is here to help us. And so that's whenever we all started jumping in, and they had radios that they were able to use from, you know, their vehicles to hit other towers and stuff. But all of our towers in our area were completely down. So, like I said, we were having a hard time communicating with any of our guys on our radios. And so that's whenever everything started jumping in, and mm-hmm. we started getting some help into us, and people started pouring in, and it was indescribable. Like I said, it's just, they all started pouring in, and we started slowly but surely getting resources into us. And at this time, we still had all been up for many, many, many hours. Very little sleep, 30 minutes here, you know, an hour here, whatever. And then I remember once we finally did, it was a few days after the storm, we finally were able to get landlines. And that's when the just calls were just coming, pouring in, people calling and wondering if their loved one was still alive, and people wanting us to go check and see. And we had to tell them, no, right now we're not going and checking on specific houses. Right now we're going, our guys are going door to door to door and sweeping through the debris and the rubble and making sure that there's no living, you know, person, no person there.
Right.
So it was just search and rescue basically at that time.
Oh, geez.
And so, but like I said, we would answer a phone and hang it up and then we'd bring right back again. It was just like constant all day long.
Now, how long did calls like that last after, you know, this aftermath now of the hurricane? How many, was it still complete chaos of people looking for family members or
oh,
help
yes.
for
weeks? It was like that for a week. It was like that for a week. We didn't get our very first TERT team until a week after the storm. And so, which was amazing. The TERT team that came in, amazing, like a godsend. Cause we just so many calls. I think my boss said that for those few days after the storm, we were generating like, well, it's not even an accurate count, but we think about 5,000 calls a day or more, which for us is a huge number. But that's just what we were able to answer.
Right.
Not the ones that wouldn't come through because our lines were so jammed. The phone system was running very slow because there's so many people calling and so many people wanting help and whatnot that, you know, that's just the numbers that we were just able to answer from what I understand. I don't know the specific numbers, but yeah, right. I mean, it was just insane. We still are getting calls, but not like it was right after the storm. But yeah, but right Jeez. After the storm, about a week, it was just nonstop.
Well, shout out to the TERT team that came out that, you know, helped you guys and, You know, going into the wrap up of this, I mean, this is an amazing story. We could go on and on talking yes. about this. And I'm just sitting here listening, but I'm also looking at the time because I know you have somewhere else that you got to go to as well. So going into the wrap up of this episode, with everything that you and your crew went through during this time, what are some things that you can tell, you know, our audience listening, you know, what you could be the public as well, if you know, for staying or leaving, but mostly for dispatch to be able to deal with something like this. So what are some things that you could say?
I know that through all this, we've become stronger. I say that if I can work a hurricane, I can work anything. And we've all been saying that. We've all become very close. We've all very close through all of this. My advice, though, is like, if the officials are telling you to get out, please get out. I mean, it's very awesome that we only had 2 confirmed deaths from Harvey. Mm-hmm. Only two. It could have been worse, though. But yeah. I mean, it's just, you need to prepare yourself. If you're going to live in an area where a hurricane could possibly come through, you need to prepare yourself. And those people that weren't prepared, I mean, like I said, you just need to prepare yourself. And us as a comm center, we've become stronger. We are better dispatchers because of this. Like I said, I know that I can work anything now. Like, that's how I feel. Like, after what we've been through, I didn't take a shower for 3 days I know for sure it was 3. It may have been 4, but didn't take a shower. I was sleeping at my desk. I mean, like, I feel like that if I can live and work through Hurricane Harvey, and I can pretty much handle any other call that's going to come my way now. So
that's awesome. Well, I want to thank you very, very much for being on the podcast. I think actually the last, when, you know, talking about going 3 or 4 days, I think one of the messages you sent me was, I'm going to go home and finally shower, or something like that.
Yes.
So
yes.
I think we actually talked about that a little bit, but again, mm-hmm. thank you so much for being on the podcast. This is an amazing story and we're going to put it out there. So for those who are listening, if you have any comments, questions, or you want to be a guest on the show, you can email us on this WTTpodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter. That's @901podcast. You can like us on Facebook. It's facebook.com/WithinTheTrenchesPodcast. And this episode and all the other episodes are, you can listen to them 24/7 on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, SoundCloud, Google Play Music, iHeartRadio, and the Jabberlog.com. And this episode is supported by InDigital, a leader in next-gen core services. Have a good one, everybody.
You just listened to a Code 7 Network podcast. If you have any questions or would like to be a guest on the show, send an email to WTTpodcast@gmail.com.